Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name is Kerry Stevenson, and some of you will know that a couple of weeks ago, I had a chat with Kyle Floyd. He's the CEO of Vox Royalty. They're listed on the TSXV in Canada, and they trade under the ticker code Vox. Today, I've invited their chief investment officer, Spencer Cole, who, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is a good Aussie boy who's up there in Toronto, to come and have a chat with us about what is this about royalty companies and why we should look at it from an investment point of view. Why should people like us have exposure to the streaming, the royalty sector, and why Spencer thinks that really we don't fully understand the value, I guess, of having this in your portfolio. Spencer, thanks for joining us. Late here down in the Gold Coast, but think early morning for you. Don't you love Zoom because it just obviates all the time frame issues, but welcome to Small Caps.
Thanks for having me, Kerry. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Now, first up, I have to ask you this, Spencer, before we get into the whys and wherefores of Vox and the opportunity for investors. You're a good Aussie boy. How the heck did you get up to Canada working for Vox? Because your background, just to let our listeners know, your background is BHP and South 32. So you understand the mining game, and now you're up in Canada.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to share a bit about that, Kerry. I wish I could tell your listeners that it was some grand master plan where I would move from X job to Y job and North America was a key part of it. But unfortunately, it was for matters of the heart. I was working at a mine in Boddington, Western Australia, which is a town of 1,200 people in a production leadership role, and doing long distance with a Canadian girl up in Toronto. And the long distance from rural Western Australia to Toronto was proving a bit difficult. So that was the original genesis for moving to Toronto a few years ago.
Oh, I love your honesty. That's fantastic. Because some people would just turn around and say, well, I've got this grand plan. It was a girl. That's okay. Hope it worked out.
I'm human.
You're human. Lovely to hear. Well, Spencer, let's talk about, first up, I think a number of us down in Australia don't fully understand how royalties work. So give us, how do royalties work?
Absolutely, Kerry. So I'll walk through just the most common example. So let's say, Kerry, you're a prospector out in the gold fields of Kalgoorlie. And let's say you strike it rich, you hit one, you know, bonanza drill hole, and all of a sudden you think, you know, you've essentially got a new discovery on your hands, but you know, you don't have $200 million sloshing around in your back pocket, Kerry, to actually build the mine. Now, I'm not projecting. I don't know, maybe you do have $200 million in your back pocket, so apologies if you do. But what's very common in that example, Kerry, is the prospector that doesn't have the capital to take the mine forward or the discovery forward, they'll sell out to a larger developer, generally a mid-cap or large-cap miner. And because that discovery is still very early days, so it generally has quite a bit of risk associated with it, the larger mining company will say, Kerry, we'll give you $1 million in cash or stock, and we'll give you a contract, which is a royalty contract, that means that if this ever becomes a mine, you'll get generally between 1-3% of all the revenue from this discovery, so from this tenement. That's the most common way that these royalties are created. It's following a discovery when there's a change of ownership in the actual project. And so our business model at Vox Royalty is we approach you, Kerry, as the prospector in, say, 5 years' time, and we say, look, Kerry, you know, would you be interested in selling that royalty contract to us? You know, we have a portfolio of 54 of them. We can take the risk on that doesn't become a mine, and we can give you cash today to buy that royalty investment from you. And what we find time and time again, Kerry, is that, you know, if you're a prospector and if that's your major sort of investment, It's completely illiquid. You can't just sell a royalty on a stock exchange. So for us as a global mining investment company, you know, we're better equipped to sort of unlock that value for you and to take that risk on ourselves, because we have so many other royalties, so that if that doesn't become a mine, you know, we've still got 53, 54 other investments that, across our portfolio.
Well, that makes sense. But how do you find them?
Yeah, it takes a lot of digging. So over the last 10 years, we've built what we believe is the world's largest proprietary database of mining royalties. So we have over 8,000 third-party mining royalties in our database. So that database allows us to sort of zero in on any part of the world, on any commodity, on any sort of stage of development. And we can specifically focus on certain royalty opportunities in a lot of cases that our competitors are completely blind to. So,
Why are your competitors blind to it? Is it because you've got the database of knowledge?
This database has been painstakingly built over the last 10 years. We went through tens of thousands of public documents, literally terabytes or thousands of gigabytes worth of private exploration data. We did deals with different mining departments. In some cases, we even went to physical storerooms to go through dusty old boxes of historical exploration data to look for any possible reference to a mining royalty. So we're somewhat obsessive about locating these mining royalties and the prospectors that hold them.
That's a good Australian accent there, as we said that you are originally from Australia. You're now up there. When you go through these dusty boxes and these, are you traveling around the world, or is all that information in Canada? We have a couple of Aussies there, because I know there's a big focus on Australia with Vox Royalty.
No, absolutely. Australia is our largest sort of single investment location. So 37 of our 54 royalties are in Australia, and heavily weighted towards WA. So the short answer to your question is, we source that information from all around the world. So our team is strategically located around the globe. We've got one of our colleagues is based in Western Australia. We've got another, myself and our CFO are based in Toronto. Our CEO, Kyle's in Denver. And then we've got a couple of two team members based in the Cayman Islands, which is where we originally domiciled. So we're all around the world to be in front of as much sort of mining deal flow as possible.
Is that difficult to have such a discipline? Because I think you're quite a lean team, aren't you? I mean, it's not, and that's the thing with royalty companies. I think we said when we were chatting before that, you know, Franco-Nevada, $1 billion company, only has 20 people, and Vox Royalty, you don't have a lot of people around. So it's a lean team, if you like. How is it to working in that sort of environment? Because a lot of people wouldn't cope with sort of, you know, there's only two of us up in Toronto and the CEO's in Denver. How do you make that work?
Oh, look, Kerry, I think in this sort of pandemic era, you know, remote work has become the new norm, really. And, you know, from our perspective, it allows us to essentially have someone awake, 24/7. So similar to the Roman Empire, where they said that the sun never sets on the Roman Empire, the sun never sets on Vox Royalty, because we've always got someone awake chasing royalty deals. So, you know, we find it quite easy, because from day dot we've been remote. So, I think from our perspective, particularly having boots on the ground in Western Australia during the pandemic has been, you know, hugely helpful, given people can't essentially get in or out of WA. So for us to continue being able to grow in Australia, acquiring new royalties, it's been, you know, hugely helpful.
Spencer, do you think the Australian investor understands this market? Do you think there's a lot of growth to come for people to say, you know what, this is a very good way for me to have exposure to commodities without all the risk? I'd like to find out from you, if you like, to unpack why you see the royalty business as something that each portfolio should have because of the potential. Because at the end of the day, you know, I'm an investor as well. I guess at the end of the day, what we're looking for is what's in it for us and how am I going to make money?
Absolutely, Kerry. So, look, I think the short answer is Australia is in a really unique position where there's so many amazing royalties over Australian mining assets. But, you know, for the better part of the last, well, 30 odd years since the royalty industry was created, the royalty industry has grown to be a $70 billion industry.
Oh, wow.
Which is heavily North American centric. So you've got 30 odd listed royalty companies that are, you know, by and large listed in either New York or Toronto. And Australia, only the last 12 months, that just there's been the first royalty company listed on the ASX, really, which was a spin out of essentially one iron ore royalty from Iluka. The company's called Deterra. So, you know, I think for investors that are listening, I think this royalty industry is something that is going to continue to grow in Australia. So I think investors would be well-minded to get up the curve more rapidly on it, because I think it's something that's here to stay and it's something that's going to grow, particularly in the Australian market. In terms of why I guess investors should be interested, I'll share with you what I shared with four of my siblings when they were, you know, when they invested in our IPO last year. They said, why the hell do I want to invest in a royalty company? You know, why don't I just put my money in these junior explorers like I've done historically? And so I sat down, these four sibling brothers and sisters of mine, and I said, okay, give me a few minutes. Sometimes it's hard to keep them focused at the best of times. But I said, look, essentially, if you want commodity-based exposure, you want upside, particularly, you know, to the gold price and iron ore price, but you don't want all the downsides of mining companies, such as cost inflation or, you know, blowouts on capital cost overruns when you're building new mines, and, you know, dilution. You know, a lot of mining companies obviously have to go back to the capital markets and do 3, 4, 5 different equity raisings. So when all is said and done, as you as the shareholder, you know, you're owning a fraction of the actual underlying mining asset by the time it comes into production. If you don't want that dilution, you don't want the cost overruns, but you want the top line commodity exposure and you want the exploration upside, you want all the benefits that go with mining, a royalty company offers that in spades. So because our business model is sitting back and essentially getting checks from different mines around the world, you know, we get all that price exposure, we get all that upside from exploration success, without any of the downside of actually operating the mine. And then from a risk perspective, Kerry, like, you know, we've got 54 separate royalty investments. So we're, you know, perfectly diversified across mining companies, countries, different mining operations themselves. So, you know, investors get this wonderful array of diversification with all of that financial upside, as I mentioned. So it really is the smartest way to play commodities, you know, globally. And that's why, you know, royalty companies have outperformed any type of commodity-based investment for the last two decades. So I guess for all those reasons, that's why I think investors, particularly in Australia, should really, you know, spend a bit of time looking at royalty companies.
It's interesting. And thank you for that, because that's quite an interesting way to look at it. I've always thought that royalty companies were, you know, silver and gold. You know, you've got Silver Wheaton, you've got Franco-Nevada. I mean, from memory, historically, have they been more focused on that precious metals royalty rather than general? And are you, where are you guys looking? Is it precious metals as well? Or are you looking at commodities across the board like nickel or copper, et cetera?
No, you're absolutely right, Kerry, that the history of the industry is very precious metal centric and more specifically gold centric.
Yeah.
To put it into perspective, you know, the industry was essentially founded in 1986 when a prospector was selling a gold royalty in Nevada, essentially through a local Nevada newspaper. And two enterprising individuals from Canada ended up acquiring this royalty in Nevada for $2 million. Since that day in 1986, that royalty has generated over $1 billion in revenue.
Wow.
And it's still worth another $1 billion on paper. So, you know, and they bought that for $2 million in 1986. So, yes, the industry is heavily gold-centric, but, you know, you get some of these, you know, you buy some of these royalties and just the exponential growth you can see in them is, you know, it's mind-boggling. I think in terms of our business model, so, you know, the industry is heavily precious metals weighted. And so as a company, we're about 70% precious metals weighted, more specifically gold, silver, and to a lesser extent, platinum group metals. But then the other 30% of our company really is, you know, chasing deep value across the commodity spectrum. So, for example, you know, we bought a producing iron ore royalty from a telecommunications company.
Oh, goodness.
An unlikely owner of a royalty, but historically they'd been an ASX-listed junior explorer. Their company had been hollowed out as a shell company, and then a telecommunications business was dropped into it. So we could see from our royalty database that this company still held this really interesting producing iron ore royalty. So anyway, I digress. But
why would they want to give it up if it's a producing iron ore? Surely they're getting revenue from it, or was it just a distraction on their balance sheet?
Oh, I think two reasons, Kerry. One was this iron ore royalty in question had a prepayment where the previous the predecessor company had been prepaid a sum of money, and once that prepayment was extinguished through royalty revenue, then the royalty would start paying. So we could see that prepayment was on the cusp of being extinguished. So we sort of targeted, you know, our outreach at that point. The other part to that, the answer, Kerry, is that if you're a telecommunications company, you know, the best way for you to create value for shareholders is, you know, investing and operating telecommunications assets. So for us to you know, unlock some value, really the definition of non-core value for that company, so they could reinvest in their core telecommunications business, it was a win for them and win for their shareholders. And otherwise, them holding a mining royalty and any sort of mining asset was just going to be a distraction for management. So that's the perfect possible transaction that you know, we could script, really. But that iron ore royalty represents part of our 30% non-precious metals exposure. So we have royalties in copper, nickel, zinc, and a few in vanadium as well. So ultimately, our business is to find really attractive royalties and acquire them and you know, manage them for our investors, so that we can generate the highest risk-adjusted returns in the entire royalty industry. So whether they're precious metals or sit outside of precious metals, where we can see value for our investors, we'll absolutely acquire them.
Now, you only listed, I think, just over a year ago from memory, and your share price is up year to date. I had a look. It's trading, I think, around $4. It's up about 38%. Talk to us about where you see the growth coming from. In other words, if we were to invest today, where do you, as Chief Investment Officer, give us reasons why now's a good time and where you see the growth coming from for Vox Royalties?
Absolutely. So I think one of the key reasons why, you know, investors should seriously consider a company like Vox is where we are in terms of our exponential growth curve. You know, we went public last May with only one producing royalty asset. We now have five. That's set to organically increase to 10 in late 2023. That's without a single extra dollar invested. That's just based on the royalties we have today. So going from one to five to 10 producing assets. And so, as you can imagine, as more royalties start producing, you know, that obviously impacts revenue quite, you know, substantially. So you know, we doubled our revenue guidance for this year already, and you know, we think that the royalties are delivering well on that revised guidance. And then, you know, from going ahead over the next 2 years, as we continue increasing the number of producing royalties, that revenue is set to continue beyond there. So, and that doesn't even talk to all the volume of exploration work that's going on in our royalties and all the exciting development projects that are being progressed even closer towards production as well. So in a nutshell, you know, investors are getting very attractively priced exponential growth by buying into Vox today.
Spencer, again, as Chief Investment Officer, do you get to a point where you're looking at a royalty, maybe you've even taken it on, maybe you said, yep, we're going to buy that royalty. Have you come across a moment where you've said, whoops, made a bit of a boo-boo here and you have to offload it? Has that happened?
Look, you know, we've had a few small investments where we perhaps, you know, we perhaps sort of, there were certain factors out beyond our control that we couldn't, you know, we couldn't foresee. Where, you know, the mining company that operates the property has taken a different operational pathway forward. You know, ultimately, we're buying sort of investments that are linked to the underlying mine. So, you know, we're not the mining company ourselves, Kerry. So there's always an element of judgment there, but that's very much at the margin. You know, we've deployed about $30 million of capital to create $150 million of equity value. So, you know, from let's talk about that top line revenue.
Let's go through some of those numbers so people can understand where you're at.
Sure. So that the metrics I was just quoting, that's invested capital. So we've deployed 30 million Canadian to create about $150 million of equity value or market cap. In terms of revenue, this year we're doing, you know, our guidance to the market was 4 to 5 million in top line revenue. We haven't provided formal guidance for next year, but brokers have us doing between about 6 to 8 million. And then the following year, they have us doing between about 8 to 10 million. So, you know, long run, we think there's sort of a multiple of that potential revenue that could be potentially generated from our royalty portfolio. And as we talked about before, you know, we don't need to increase headcount. You know,
that's what I was about to ask you.
So we're in a really fortunate position where we can continue adding more royalties, or we can also continue just watching our current portfolio mature over the coming years and continue generating more and more revenue. So, you know, we're already at the point now where we need to start considering, you know, in 12 to 24 months, do we start a meaningful dividend program? We have had an active buyback program when our shares were trading, you know, 30 or 40% lower. We were actively buying back our stock because we just thought it was the best possible investment we could make. But we're actively looking at different ways to sort of create value for shareholders and how to unlock future free cash flow.
You spoke earlier that 37 out of the 54 royalties are actually here in Australia. Would Vox Royalty look at potentially a listing on the ASX for those people that find it easier to trade on the ASX, or are you going to stay TSXV?
Look, it's a good question, and it's a question we get quite often, Kerry. I think we're actively looking at secondary listings, and the ASX is one of those potential exchanges. I think one of the challenges in terms of where we ultimately choose a secondary listing is just the trade-off between, you know, liquidity and the level of understanding already about the royalty model versus, you know, where our assets are domiciled. So I think it makes a lot of sense given, you know, there's brand and name recognition amongst our operators and our assets in Australia. But the flip side of that coin is a lot of our competitors, they've gone to the New York Stock Exchange for their secondary listing because there's already, you know, collectively billions of dollars of capital chasing royalty companies on the New York Stock Exchange. So I guess that's the trade-off we're looking at the moment. It's not to say that we won't list on the ASX. It's just a question of, you know, what's the right exchange at the right time.
Why do you think that the US market, Canadian market, understands royalties a lot more than the Australian market?
Look, I think, you know, simplistically, and, you know, I'm a pretty no-nonsense sort of person, but I think where people have made money historically, you know, more money flows. And I think in the US and North America generally, people have made a lot of money in the royalty industry over the last 10 to 15 years. You know, 15 years ago, the listed royalty industry was 5 companies that were worth about $4 billion. It's now a $70 billion industry where those same 5 companies are worth collectively about 40, 45 billion of that.
Wow.
So, you know, basically 15 years ago, if you threw a dart at a royalty dartboard, you would have made, you know, at least 3X, if not more. So I think when people have made so much money in the royalty industry, it's sort of naturally solicited and created a lot of eyeballs and interest. I think investors in Australia are only just now getting that same opportunity. So I think as more Australian investors make money in royalty names, I think there'll be that same following and that same sort of pull to have royalty companies list on the ASX.
Spencer, where to from here for Vox? Are you increasing the number of royalty companies? Where's your focus right now?
So our focus at the moment, Kerry, is really twofold. One of the key focal points is looking at new royalty acquisitions. And, you know, I think we're particularly looking at a number of extremely large precious metal royalties. And more specifically, our sweet spot really is royalties that are right on the cusp of a major event. So just about to go into construction or just about to go into production. You know, ideally royalties from 3 months from first production to 24 months from first production. So that's really what we're chasing at the moment. We're continuing to look to add royalties in that sort of, you know, pre-production bracket at great value, obviously, you know, not being disciplined with how we allocate our capital. And then the second sort of thing that we're focused on is really, you know, investor awareness. It may sort of surprise and shock you to hear, Kerry, that we've actually been quite heavily discounted because of our Australian royalties being listed in Toronto. Okay. This may be bizarre. It's like, but you know, when so many of our royalties are operated by ASX listed mining companies, a lot of our North American investors, they haven't heard of, you know, Northern Star Resources, or they don't really know much about Newcrest, or, you know, they think Mineral Resources sounds like a generic sort of mining company name, when we all know in Australia it's the fastest growing iron ore producer. So part of the biggest, you know, discount in our stock has been people not truly understanding and giving us credit for our Australian royalties. And so that's something we've been really focused on in the last couple of months. And I think what's been really pleasing is the market's starting to wake up to that, particularly as our cash flow continues to grow. So I'd say that investor awareness, and particularly around our Australian projects and our Australian operators, that's a key focal point for us as management at the moment.
So do you think that your share price right now, around that $4 mark, it's discounted because you're listed on the TSXV and the Canadians and the US market don't fully understand the Australian market? Is that where you see the disconnect? And do you see as that is where the value lies for investing in Vox today?
I think that is one of the biggest sort of irrational discounts in the stock, Kerry. There's a few other things that, you know, as I mentioned before, we're at this sort of exponential growth curve where, you know, even you just take the last three quarters, quarter on quarter, we've been growing revenue by about 500%. So I think some investors looked at us 12 months ago and said, oh, you've only got one producing royalty. Now we have five. And so I think part of that is a timing lag. As we're increasing our cash flows, I think that will naturally garner more attention as well. But yeah, that irrational discount around our Australian royalties, I think, is definitely a short-term gap and a short-term buying opportunity for investors.
You heard it here, ladies and gentlemen, a short-term buying opportunity. This is not financial advice. Do your own research. The last word goes to you, Spencer. We're just about running out of time. What's your final word to our listeners out there?
Look, I think Australian investors, particularly, you know, they owe it to themselves and to their portfolios to spend some time looking at mining royalty companies. You know, over the last 20 years, as I mentioned, they've been the best way to play the commodity cycle. And to, you know, a company like Vox offers you not only that same sort of upside and that same sort of exposure, but with an extremely solid base of 37 Australian royalties. So, you know, I'd welcome investors who have further questions. Feel free to email us or go to our website. And thanks for their time today.
Well, you better tell us the email and the website just so that they don't have to scramble around looking for it. What's the best email and what's the website?
So I'll give you my personal email address. I may regret this later, but always good to hear from listeners and investors. It's spencer@voxroyalty.com. So feel free to ping me an email. And our website is www.voxroyalty.com.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, a $70 billion sector. And as Spencer explained, they've really just getting started, listed last year, market cap 150 mil, 54 royalties, 37 of them here in Australia. It's a very good time to get involved. That's why I was so pleased to have a chat with Spencer today. Spencer Cole, Chief Investment Officer for Vox Royalty. Thank you so much for joining me on Small Caps today.
Thanks, Kerry. Thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure.